Mackerel Podcast number 359, special edition, the WWDC 13 keynote, June 10th, 2013, brought to you by Smile Software, makers of fine software. Find out more at smilesoftware.com/MWPodcast. Welcome back to the Mackerel Podcast. I am your special guest host. Well, you can decide if I'm special or not. Jason Snell here with three other folks, fellows, gentlemen. Well, I don't want to make assumptions about you being gentlemen. The three other members of our staff who were there at Moscone West today as we record this morning for the Worldwide Developers Conference 2013 keynote. So we're going to recap everything that Apple announced here on June 10th. And joining me, these three people that I suggested were gentlemen. Again, I'll let you be the judge. Right across from me, it's Lex Friedman.
Hi, Jason.
Good to see you in person.
Thanks. It's good to be seen by you in person.
Yes, I'm watching you now, in fact.
Yes.
Now I'm going to turn away and look at Dan Frakes, who's sitting across from me as well. Hi,
hey,
Dan.
Hey, Jason. Yeah, we don't see each other very often.
No, even though you live much closer to me than Lex does.
A little bit, yeah.
That's true. And next to me here is, of course, Dan Morin. Hi, Dan.
I don't understand why I had to Skype in even though I'm sitting in this room with you.
I know, it's a shame.
Seemed
unnecessary. Look away. Don't look at us. So there was a lot today. This was packed. The last time I was in Moscone West was for the Google I/O keynote, and let me tell you, nothing happened, and it went on for 3 hours. This was a 2 hours almost on the nose presentation by Apple, kicked off by Tim Cook. Lots of announcements, lots of details. I thought we'd start by talking about the new hardware. This is the Macworld podcast, and there was new Mac hardware announced today. First up, the MacBook Air got a refresh. It's not necessarily the most earth-shattering news, but I'm a fan of the MacBook Air. Dan uses a MacBook Air. Dan Frakes, you use a MacBook Air. What's wrong with you, Lex?
I have a MacBook Air, but I use a MacBook Pro as my main.
All right, well,
one.
Then you can't say anything here. Dan Frakes, what do you think about the new MacBook Air?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing I think for a lot of people is that the battery life, right? I mean, MacBook Air has always had good battery life, but this is like all-day battery life. What is it, nine hours for the 11-inch and 12 for the 13-inch?
That's right.
So, I mean, that's pretty incredible if it ends up being true.
Well, and I mean, I don't know about you, but I find myself occasionally disappointed by the battery life on my MacBook Air 11-inch one, because even though it is small and has a smaller display and therefore uses less power, it's also a lot smaller in terms of how much battery capacity is actually able to fit in that case.
Well, and we're spoiled by the iPad. Sure.
Right, and the iPad, of course, which is much smaller, than seems to last much longer. But the improvements to the processor, I think, are kind of obvious to anybody who looks at Intel's roadmap, and Intel's pretty public with that kind of information. So seeing a speed bump there, that's about to be expected. I mean, it's been about a year since we've seen the last improvement to them. But, I mean, the battery life and the focus on performance is very welcome, because the reason many of us have small MacBook Airs is because we take them places constantly. Well, Jason and I were sitting in the keynote with our MacBook Airs typing away.
We almost chucked them over our shoulders in disgust when the new ones were announced, but we thought we should finish our job first.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, good call.
And at $999, you finally get 128 gigabytes on the low-end one instead of 64,
which is kind of necessary.
It's not a price cut, but I find myself recommending the MacBook Air to a lot of people, and I say they start at $999. First off, I have to temper that with there's not enough storage in there, and now there is twice as much. And then the other thing I say is, well, you might prefer the bigger one, the 13-inch, but that's $200 more. Now it's not. Now it's $1099, which I think is a big deal too, because I would bet you that is the best-selling, like, entry-level kind of Mac laptop.
I mean,
is the 13-inch Air.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to sell a lot better now, because I think a lot of the people who bought the 11-inch did for budget reasons, not because, like us, for portability reasons. And so I think bringing the price down $100 is going to make that the new entry for most people.
And it replaced, you know, effectively the MacBook, right, in the lineup. So, you know, it is the entry-level Mac almost in many ways. I mean, because most people don't buy a Mac Mini, which is about the only Mac that's cheaper than it. So it's kind of a lot of people's first introductions. It's a great machine for, you know, like kids. People buy it for their kids going off to college or what have you. So it's even more compelling now with the bumped up features. We're gonna still probably wait a while, it seems like, to see a Retina edition, which makes sense. I mean, that's very much a Pro feature that got rolled out on the MacBook Pro last year. It makes sense that it will take a little bit longer for it to hit the what is now essentially the consumer level of it, their laptop lineup.
The only thing Apple didn't announce on the battery that I was rooting for, only because John Siracusa planted it in my head, was this notion of an algorithmically smarter battery. Because, you know, John, like I do,
uses our colleague John Siracusa, for those who don't know,
senior contributor for Mac,
and he writes for Macworld 2, yes.
But you know, we leave our MacBooks plugged in a lot of the time, and that's bad for the battery. Apple says you should discharge it semi-frequently, and battery experts say you should leave your batteries around 40 or 50% most of the time, and that's the best way to prolong their lives. And so he was suggesting some kind of software algorithm that could look at your battery and say, hey, if you don't need a full battery charge midday, then I'm going to let this drop on its own and recharge even while it's still plugged in. And they didn't do anything about that. And so I don't know about you, but every time I buy a new Mac laptop, I'm excited by whatever the battery level promise is. And then you get it and it lasts that long for the first couple months and then it doesn't anymore. And then I'm sad.
Yeah, I have that with my Air is 2 years old now, and I can tell that it doesn't last. Yeah.
Well, I would not be surprised to see, you know, I think one of the things that they've talked about a little bit, they certainly focused on battery life. I remember when they did their executive shakeup last year, that Bob Mansfield ended up in charge of sort of a division doing, I think it was mostly wireless and semiconductor, this sort of technologies division. And I would not be surprised to see them investigating alternative sources, because battery technology hasn't really changed from a, you know, sort of chemical physics standpoint, you know, in many, many years. And they're in everything that we use now, right? They're in every electronic device. My toothbrush has a rechargeable battery in it. So we're at the point where there is some serious work needed in terms of finding.
Did it come from your teeth?
Did my toothbrush come from my
teeth? No, the battery that's stuck in your toothbrush. Like, was it stuck in your teeth first?
It's not stuck in my toothbrush. It's actually in my toothbrush.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that would be weird.
Max, I thought I told you couldn't talk.
My mistake.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what that next generation is, but I don't think it will necessarily appear on a MacBook Air, and it seems like it's still something that's a few years out.
Well, I found that interesting because when we'll probably talk about this briefly when we get to iOS 7, one of the big things that they talked about iOS 7 was we did all these new things under the hood to make the batteries last longer and to be more power efficient. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised that they didn't say, and we did that all on iOS 10 too.
Well, they did.
They did.
A little bit, but not.
No,
but
I challenge you, Frank.
Yeah, I agree with Lex.
They showed all these things with the process. Are we allowed to talk about it yet?
Well, I wasn't going to go there yet, so okay. Let's wait.
No,
well,
but
you're
but
wrong, and
10.
I'll tell you later.
Yeah, we'll tell you. Stay tuned. No, it's like a cliffhanger.
But did they say? But what I'm saying is, did they say that they were bringing all that to iOS 10? Or excuse me, to OS 10?
Yes.
For the Mac.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then I stand corrected.
You must have passed out.
I must have passed
for a moment
out
there, which it was
warm. It was warm in there.
So, but can I say the one thing that I was disappointed with the MacBook Air, and that is that. Thank you. Is that I still would love to see like LTE networking or, you know, some kind of wireless cellular networking in the laptop line.
It's got to be a carrier issue.
Today, I brought my iPad and an external keyboard to work at the keynote because I knew I had an internet connection.
Well, I mean, I think their argument, Apple would argue, is that if you've got a phone, right? Just do it on that. I'm not saying that's correct. I'm saying that is, I think, to their mind, that is the solution to that problem. It's not necessarily building chips into. Well,
I think the carriers are scared.
Why does the iPad have a?
I think the carriers are scared because on the Mac you can have all your different stuff open all at the same time and it's all pulling in data.
Yeah, but the PC laptops that do that.
Well, then it's Apple's fault.
Okay. Let's move on to the other piece of new hardware, which we saw a preview of in an un-Apple-like approach. It's not going to be available till this fall because the processors aren't available until this fall or
later this year.
End of the year, you're right. I'm assuming
just
fall.
In time for Christmas.
Yes, December 31st.
Yeah.
It's the new Mac Pro, long promised, finally promised again.
That was a heck of an introduction though. Mm-hmm. I mean, Phil Schiller with the kick and bass on the video that they played up there. And Phil Schiller,
quite a subwoofer.
I enjoyed Phil Schiller's editorializing about how people say Apple can't innovate
anymore.
Can
no longer innovate my bleep.
Yes.
We're going to be friendlier than the Apple keynote here.
They innovated his bleep is what they did, Dan.
Yeah. Whoa.
They did. So the Mac Pro is this, like, it looks sort of like a trash can.
But
or
a very nice trash can.
Or a Quaker Oats box or something like that.
A very, very nice Quaker Oats box.
It's a black cylindrical prism.
Yeah, it's a cylindrical.
You like that?
It's a cylindrical object with a kind of a ring.
Like looks like a subwoofer.
It does. It looks like a round, glossy black subwoofer.
And what was interesting to me was, I mean, not that it matters so much, but as they showed the video, I got within the first 2 seconds of video that it was round because they showed some footage of it and it was clearly round. But then the audience didn't seem to totally get it until the final reveal shot.
Well, it was unclear if that was, for me, I was like, is that zoomed in on part of it? Is that the whole thing? But I mean, I think, and we got a glimpse at it afterwards. It was in these rotating, or no, they weren't
Lucite
rotating.
Cases.
Lucite cases outside.
Yes.
A la the original iPhone when it was released. And I mean, honestly, if you want to compare it to a Mac that you've seen before, it's the Cube. It's basically the Cube for the new generation. Hopefully better received, but in terms of design, right? It's this upright, you can take the exterior off, and it's got all the chips and everything are sort of laid out around what they described as this thermal core, which I think means that there's basically a fan in the center of it, and the exhaust is on top.
There's a fan at the top.
Okay,
and it sucks air up through the middle, and then the air goes out. Okay, it comes in through the bottom, goes straight up the middle and out the top. And it's really interesting because it's a cylinder made of extruded aluminum, solid aluminum, and you can slip it off. It's like a sleeve, and inside it's like a triangle, and there's three sides there, obviously, triangle. Yeah.
Just like two a triangle.
Of, refresh fact, my geometry here.
Yeah. Two of the sides are huge video cards, and the other side is the flash memory and the RAM. And then sort of in the middle, behind the RAM and the flash memory, is the motherboard. And so you can upgrade the RAM. You can upgrade the storage very expensively.
You probably can't upgrade those video cards is my guess.
Right. That's my guess. Right. So, but you can upgrade the flash memory. It's no hard drives. It's only flash memory.
You can upgrade it yourself or you can upgrade
it? You can upgrade the flash memory yourself because it comes on a mini PCI Express card that fits into a slot on the motherboard.
Is this then the mythical Mac Pro Tower?
It's close. It's close. It's pretty close to what I was hoping for a couple months. Was it a couple months ago I wrote about it?
A couple months ago, a year ago, two years ago, and three years ago.
So,
but it did. It is. It doesn't have the giant hard drive bays. That's right. Going to be some. You know, somebody's going to need to make a Thunderbolt 2 expansion chassis for people who want to load up like five hard drives
or PC cards.
There's no PCI card slots. But yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess there are specialized cases where you want PCR cards. There are certainly pros who use video capture cards or what have you. But certainly the pro-level audience, I think, you know, especially developers, there's not as much stuff that you get to use.
Right. Although, you know, Apple made it clear that they're expecting PCIe expansion cards, right?
There's multiple types of expansion cards.
Thunderbolt 2, which the performance is going to be comparable or better. And the biggest concern I read a lot of people when I wrote about the Mac Mini Tower, people were complaining about graphics performance, and they put two pretty advanced graphics cards in here, and it can actually support out of the box up to three
4K
displays, which is pretty incredible.
I don't need that many pixels.
Yeah.
That's way more pixels than anybody needs. Ever. Anybody.
And presumably a giant Retina display that will come from Apple at some point.
You got to figure that's coming.
Welcome to our 70-inch.
If it supports 4K displays, you got to figure there's finally going to be a Retina big display coming.
I think it might be a while, but sure.
This fall.
You think it'll be that soon?
Yeah.
Yeah, to sell with that mm-hmm. Mac Pro for like 10.
Because they don't want you to go.
Yeah, that's going to be expensive.
Yeah, so what do you think that Mac Pro is going to cost?
I was talking to Roman Loyola about this a little bit.
I've heard of him.
And I think you've heard of him. Good, $2,000 to $2,500 for the entry level.
Oh,
I was gonna say $2,500, mm-hmm. but I think it's in the $2,000 range for the base.
Yeah, right.
The current Mac Pro sells, and current is used really loosely because it's old tech, sells a base for $2,500.
Right.
I can't see it. I think this is a $3,000 computer.
Even the base. You don't think the base will be $2,500?
Nope.
The same price?
I don't. I think they're going to jack it up because
that's going to be interesting because
they built it as a premium product in an era when the G5 originally was built, which is where that enclosure comes from, and as that product has moved along and moved to Intel and got renamed, you know, it was more mainstream. I mean, it wasn't mainstream, but it was more mainstream then than it is now. And I feel like this is a product that was built specifically for the highest of the high end in an era where the iMacs and the laptops are already so powerful.
Right.
How do you
top that?
I don't feel like they needed to hit 2,500. In fact, I feel like they maybe don't even want to hit 2,500.
You may be right there. You
know, I mean, if they do, it's going to be a stripped down model and everybody's going to buy the 4,000.
But
I mean,
it uses an eighth of the aluminum.
Here's my question. Dan, are you the only one of the four of us still in the room who has a tower?
I actually,
are you off?
He doesn't read my articles.
I don't read every article.
He's too busy podcasting.
I got rid of my Mac Pro about two years ago because it was just, I mean.
Should have written an article about that.
I needed a new computer, but it was, the Mac Pro was just too big, used too much power. It heated my office year round.
And that's my point is, I mean, I think all of us maybe were probably tower users at some point.
Yeah.
I had a G3 tower that I used a long time, but I mean, I switched mostly to laptops over the past decade, and that's where the business has been.
Well, I switched to an iMac, and I still want a Mac Pro because I have the limitations of the iMac. So this is
holds
for
back
me.
Your article writing.
Yeah, exactly. It does.
Those words
write,
don't just show up.
I cannot
fast enough.
Type fast enough on this thing. No, I just wanted something with more expansion, a little more power. That want something that'll keep up with the stuff that I do, and the iMac has been slow at times. And I was hoping for a Mac Pro, and this is actually pretty much ideal for what I want.
It'll be great for ripping DVD. Oh, wait, no optical drive.
No optical drive.
Yeah, right.
Those days are over.
Yeah. Goodbye optical drive in the lineup. That is it, right?
Yeah.
Have they retired the MacBook
Pro? The old MacBook Pro.
The MacBook
still
Pro
around,
is
but those
old.
Yep. I'm guessing those will die within the next year.
Yeah.
So
if
it's almost dead.
It'll die soon.
Almost gone.
So there are going to be people who are, for them, this is like anathema to what a Mac Pro should be. I mean, they're really going to be upset.
It's too bad because this is all there is.
Right.
Does I it think it looks great.
Build your Hackintosh.
I do worry, though, because, I mean, my dad was a card-carrying Cube owner.
And they also, gave cards?
Yeah. You got because the Cube was crappy, so they gave you a card so you had something to hold on to. But, I mean, he would turn it off all the time when he was trying to plug in things. Like, every stereotypical Cube complaint, he got the cracks and stuff. And, you know, when you think about Apple with unibody Macs or with the iMac, with the stuff where it keeps the same form factor year after year, you feel like they're honing and perfecting and, okay, now they've really got it and they're not going to mess it up. But when something is this new and different,
the
I do have
gen.
This one little corner of my mind that's like, man, I hope it's not a total, you know, junk thing that's just terrible. I hope it's not a lemon.
There is always that worry with the first generation of a new thing that there might be something that they didn't anticipate, especially when you get it into like, oh, there's 20 people using it on Apple campus, and all of a sudden there's 2,000 people using it, you know.
It does support 3-4K displays, but no one's actually done it yet.
Right. We think.
But
we're
they said I could
sure.
be that guy.
There's not actually plugs enough to put all three of them in, but it supports them. Like you can put them on, so you can stack them on top of the Mac Pro.
It is exciting that this product exists, and it's not. I mean, the design of it, the actual physical design of it, is surprising. This strange pod, but the choices they made inside, I think, are not as surprising. That it doesn't have giant hard drive bays or rooms for big slots. That they built a system that is outboarding all of those peripherals. Well, so if you want to add those peripherals, add them on the outside. It's not.
And
what
they made a really
for.
Good point of this being. And this is more to the point. This is, I believe, the first really new Mac since the Mac Mini. Really, I mean, there's no. Everything else is a lot of the laptops kind of just been iterating, or the MacBook Air, I guess, is the last sort of new model. I mean, granted, this still has the Mac Pro name. But it is the most significant departure for a Mac
in a while,
in a really long time. And so, and like they said, I think they, you know, we're looking at what does the desktop computer look like for the next decade. And so, this is a really bold statement in many ways, but not a surprising one given how much we've seen stuff shift to laptops.
Right. Apple's clearly been building up to this for years now in terms of low power, you know, componentry and flash memory and, you know, everything that they've been doing, making things smaller and more energy efficient and more compact, has really been leading up to this.
Would you say the only reason it took this long is waiting for the faster top-of-the-line processors to become available?
I think this has been in the works for a while. And I think
the design takes a long time.
Yeah, the design takes a long time. And Apple has clearly been commenting on Mac Pros for over a year now.
Right.
And it's just Intel's been taking a long time to get out these new Xeon processors.
Right. I mean, there's no question they knew about this, you know, when they introduced the lackluster Mac Pro update last year, right? And everybody's like, oh, no Thunderbolt, no USB 3.0. Well, you know, that was going to be more trouble than it was worth for what was otherwise kind of a middling update. So they're saving it all for the big bang. But we'll see how it actually measures up when we get our hands on it.
And if you watch the keynote, there are 6 Thunderbolt 2 ports, not 6 FireWire 2 ports.
Oh, did you misspeak on that?
Yes.
I wondered about that.
6 FireWire 2 ports.
That's a lot of FireWire ports.
There are no FireWire ports.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on, since we were talking
about
OS X.
That was about it, right?
They pretty much wrapped up there. Everything else is pretty much fine. To OS X, the RIP, the March of the Kitties.
Goodbye, kitties.
The Apple has shifted to a new set of names, which is things that are in California, and they've chosen an odd one.
That's what I thought California. Too.
They just can't stop being weird.
Things that are in California are great.
I was like Big Sir Monterey.
Yeah, OS X Barry Bonds. He's in California, right?
Yeah. So
OS X traffic.
Golden Gate.
OS X Mavericks, which is not plural.
Maverick.
And it's not possessive. It's the name of a surf break. It's not even a beach. Because there is no beach
there. It's a wave.
It's a surf break several miles off the coast that is home to a big wave surfing competition.
And Tom Cruise as a fighter pilot.
I think it's weird because most of the people who I saw responding, at least on Twitter, who aren't from around here, do not know that that is a thing, and it sounds plural.
Yeah.
Even if it's not plural, it sounds plural. I don't know.
Maverick is a word.
Right. Complaining about Apple's naming is a fool's errand because they're going to name with the stuff what they're going to name it. But I'm just going on the record where I think calling the new iPad was lame, and I think that Mavericks is maybe not the best choice.
Long term, it's not going to matter.
Right.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, you would have expected it to be Big Sur or Yosemite or something like that.
Yosemite was Mac OS 10, they already used Golden Yosemite Gate. For Yosemite was a
Redwood.
Code name for
Nobody
something.
Nobody cares about the code names, though.
Sequoia.
Condor.
Instead, it is Mavericks.
El Capitan.
Lassen. Shasta.
North Face.
Yes, OS 10 Culver City.
Oh, by the way, I can predict that next year at this time, the purchases of California atlases will be going through the roof because people will be scouring the state for names.
And you're saying that information is not in the Maps app.
OS 10.
I'm going to say Malibu right now.
All right. So OS 10 Mavericks, be it named as it is, and we don't even know what its version number is, 10.9, I guess we assume. I thought this was a surprisingly deep set of updates that I had sort of resigned OS 10 to being mostly about syncing things with new features added in iOS. And instead, you know, we saw a lot of interesting new Mac features, both sort of customer facing and then things about, what is it, Lex? About saving energy, conserving power, things that Dan Frakes doesn't think
that's
are
right.
in here.
Because he's crazy.
Well, so I heard him talk about that with Safari, but I didn't realize they were also trying to say this also is the case.
Oh, yeah, the compressed memory.
So the compressed memory is a
big one. Compressed memory.
RAM doubler is back.
Right. When they were showing the thing with Safari, it's actually a very cool demo. They had a live graph on screen showing how much power the Mac was currently consuming.
Yes.
And then when they had this crazy active animated Safari window open, that was spiking. And then when they covered that up with another window, it immediately plunged.
Right. Which makes perfect sense, right? Because
I'm amazed it didn't happen already,
thing, right? Why do you need to devote resources?
I think that that's not just a. I don't believe that is a Safari feature.
No, you're right. You're right.
It
is. You're right. Yeah, and in fact, this shows you how brain dead I am right now. Is that I actually tweeted about all this, and the compressed memory, like you mentioned. So instead of paging memory to your drive, whether it's a hard drive or SSD. They're actually compressing inactive memory on the fly so that you're not paging to and from your drive as much. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very clever.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in here. In some ways, I mean, it was tempting to think of it as, like, with all the time they spent on the under-the-hood features, it was tempting to think of it as kind of a Snow Leopardy release. But at the same time, there are a lot of front-facing, user-facing features as
like
well.
In the Finder, yeah.
The Finder gets an update for the first time in God knows when.
The tabs, I think, are minor. I think that most people, you know, Apple's been moving away from the Finder more and more.
I know plenty of people who don't understand tabs in their browser, right?
I mean, I use tabs in my browser, but I can't imagine using tabs often in the Finder personally. I don't mind its addition.
I don't spend that much time in the Finder anymore.
You know, there's, what is it, Tab Finder, Path Finder.
Yeah.
There's like four or five little utilities that are pretty popular. So I think there are enough people to tout that, but.
Yes.
Several hundred.
I think the same thing's true with the tagging, which I like. But that's kind of existed in some forms, even in OS X with labels.
Oh, this is way cooler.
It's better. It's more useful than labels, but it's the same. It's clearly built on that. And it's,
I feel
like
tags came like a couple years too late.
Yeah, I agree.
I have too much stuff that's not tagged now. Yeah, if it had come out a couple years ago, then yes, I would have tagged everything.
There'd be some
really
great Mac gems that Dan will write reviews of that will look like use Spotlight and look through your stuff and do auto tagging of your files, probably, since Apple won't do that.
I wanted this years ago when I first started working on relational database work when I was doing web development and being like, oh, you know, it would be great if your file system could just be all like tagged. So instead of having a folder, you could just be like, oh, where's all my important stuff? You know, and Apple's been doing that, what with save searches and all my files. They've been sort of moving in that direction, whereas it's like it's not as important that you have folders full of stuff, that you make folders and have a hierarchy that you impose. You can sort of semantically figure out what that hierarchy is.
You know, there are a lot of apps, both desktop and iOS, where people organize all of their data by tagging. And it's oftentimes, I mean, maybe not to Dan Frakes, who I know really loves hierarchical folder organization, where I store all of my Macworld articles in a single folder called Macworld articles. But, you know, when people organize their stuff by tag, it's easy. If you are good at tagging, think of, you know, what's my first tag that comes to mind for this and use it, and what's my next and use it. And, you know, if you're good at tagging, then it's a very easy way to store and look at files.
But I need tags for my tags. Yeah. Is what I need.
Yeah.
Tags, because then you have all these tags across all your different apps, and you might have different tags across all of them. It's maddening.
But just the fact, you know, Finder labels, I use Finder labels a lot. But you can only
you may be in the minority.
I realize
you're
I'm
the one.
In the minority. Yeah. Mainly like to keep track of active and, you know, important things that are happening right now. But you're limited to one Finder label per thing. Right. So with tags, you can have multiple
things. I will say the one cool thing I really did like is that tagging. So you click on a tag in the sidebar, and it shows you tag stuff both on your drive and in iCloud.
Right.
Which is applies file system accessibility of iCloud in the Finder, which is kind of a big
could
deal,
be huge.
I think.
It could
that,
mean
that
you can
unifies
start.
all your stuff, and you don't have to, oh, did I save that in iCloud or did I save that on my hard drive?
And it could also potentially mean, I mean, they didn't show this, but if you can get to the iCloud files in Finder, does that mean that you can then say, hey, this is an iCloud image saved in app A, I want to open it in app B?
Yeah.
Because that would be pretty hip.
Notification Center, which was introduced in Mountain Lion, got a big update or is going to get a big update in Mavericks.
Oh, man, they addressed a big one.
Super exciting. I loved every single thing they showed about it, Jason.
Yeah? What's your favorite?
My two favorites, since you asked what my two favorites are.
What were your two favorites?
I like that they can sync across iOS and the Mac, and that you can dismiss them in one place and have them be dismissed everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
No.
But that, and they didn't show this with reminders, which is probably my most common notification center thing, but these contextual interactive notifications I think are very hip. You know, reply to an iMessage within the notification. If I can say that a task in my reminders thing is done from that, not have to click on it, have it open the reminders app, find that one, and check it off there. If I can check it off from the reminder notification, I'll be the happiest man.
If I can reply to iMessages without ever opening messages... Because I wanted that. I wanted something that would just sat up in my menu bar and it would, like, the messages come in and notifications part of messages are fine. But every time I get a notification, it opens messages. And invariably, I write a reply and I quit. And then the person writes me back and it opens messages again.
And, you know, one that they sort of glossed over a little bit is Notification Center already supports notifications from websites.
Right.
But today you have to have Safari running. And now they say that Safari won't have to be running, meaning, or you won't have to have that page open in Safari. So if you want to get Gmail notifications without leaving Gmail open in your browser, you can start to get those, and that's kind of
great. I like for the laptop, I mean, I guess for any Mac, but especially for laptops, is that when you open the lid and your computer's locked, you can still see all of the pending notifications.
Right, although I liked Jason's point that, which I thought
you
of as
well. You need to turn that off because I've already heard stories about people who have little pop-up notifications that it's like, this is an important email about that person we're firing. And it's like, no, you can't see that. So you'd need to be able to, I'm sure that's an option.
Hold on. We've just emailed you your reset password.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's probably just like on iOS where for each notification you can say show on lock screen.
Yep, yeah. That's exactly how it's going to be.
That's probably it. Full screen, multiple displays.
Dan Morin.
When I saw
I heard Dan Morin cheer from the back of the room.
I looked at Dan Morin with a big smile. So exciting.
Yeah, so
I'm really excited.
A couple versions ago, Apple introduced all sorts of things. There's Exposé from way back, but we've had full screen apps. We've had, you know, swiping around between
spaces.
The different things, spaces, mission control, all that stuff. But if you're somebody who has two screens, you have two monitors, you have a laptop open plus an external monitor, whatever, a lot of these features are completely useless, especially
4K displays.
Full screen mode.
Screen apps are great. So yeah, if you have your like 11-inch Air hooked up to a cinema display like I do, and you full screen something on your 11-inch Air, your 27-inch cinema display contains nothing but giant linen everywhere.
Yeah. And so it's meant that I always use a multiple monitor setup for working, and I just never use full screen apps.
Mm-hmm. And now you can do this. You can have these different screens run almost independently, even to the point of like there's a menu bar over there. There's a menu bar over here. It's really kind of interesting.
Here a menu bar. There a menu bar.
Some of your old favorite
MacBook
Air
menu bar. Menu bar. When I had my MacBook Air and a big screen next to it, I had the MacBook Air like as a minor task sort of view, and that would have been perfect for a full screen view and just let it sit there while I'm doing all my work. And now with Mavericks, you're going to be able to do
that.
And
let's not leave out using an Apple TV as a full screen external separate display that is not mirrored, which is actually awesome.
Right. So in Mountain Lion, they added the ability to mirror your Mac display on your Apple TV. So now you can actually set up that Apple TV and TV
because I like that
as a separate monitor.
It was fun for watching video or something. Right. It's like, oh, let me show you this video I can't get on my Apple TV. But what was tricky for me is sometimes I wanted to use the full screen display and have like sort of a multi-display setup, and it's pointless because, like, you know, I might be doing like a game or something on the big screen. It's like, but I'm still using the MacBook on my lap, and so I keep like instinctively looking down at that. And it's like, well, it doesn't matter. The same information's
for
here
me,
and there.
When I see the feature, the first thing I thought of was I'm thinking of it as the Showtime feature, because Showtime doesn't have a Roku app. The only thing the Roku app does is let you watch trailers. But they have an iPad app, and they have a Mac web-based interface that you can use to watch Showtime on demand. So it used to be that when we watch Showtime on demand at home, the laptop has to be devoted to it. I can't use my laptop for anything else. And my laptop's the only one that supports AirPlay mirroring right now. My wife's doesn't, and nothing else in the house does. But now I can keep using my computer for other things and still have weeds on the screen or whatever, and that's very exciting. That's
Well, you know, as the Mac Gems guy, I get emails from people all the time saying, I've got two menus or two displays, and I want my menus on every display, and I want my dock on every display. And here you go.
Here you go.
The dock implementation is a tiny bit weird, because it's sort of like when you have the dock hidden on the other displays, because you have to move the mouse down to where the dock should be, and then it just pops over from one display to the other.
Is it automatically hidden, or that might be an option?
Yeah, so that's why I don't know.
Because I don't auto-hide my dock anywhere.
Right, because I want it to be just the same. If the menu bar can be in both places, I'm okay with my dock being in both places.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's going to be.
Okay.
And that's pretty cool.
It's going to be.
All right,
we still haven't even gotten my favorite exciting new feature yet.
What is it, Lex? Tell us.
I think the thing I'm most excited about
is
actually... No. Do I look like Serenity Caldwell to you? It's iCloud Keychain, Jason.
Yay. Right.
So it's related to Safari.
Yeah. iCloud Keychain.
Sorry, 1Password.
Go ahead and explain it first.
Yes, before Dan explains why it's terrible.
When Apple had .Mac, what was it called most recently before?
Mobile Me.
When Apple had Mobile Me, you had some password sync between devices.
Right. Keychain sync between Macs, but not.
Then when they
really
said, well, we're going to do iCloud, by the way, we're getting rid of keychain sync. That's no longer going to be a feature. Surprise. And now it's back. It's iCloud Keychain.
It's better than ever.
It truly, sincerely is better than ever, Dan. I agree with you. Because it can generate passwords for you that are good and secure and magical.
Awesome.
It can save all of them. It can save your credit cards. And that, you know, Google just announced this with Chrome a couple weeks ago for Chrome on mobile, where you can
shopping,
save your, right. So you can, we took 27 checkout steps and made it into 3. So that now I don't have to put in my credit card information when I'm on my iPhone, because I hate putting my credit card in my, and you know, the only way I enter my credit card on any machine, Mac or iOS device, is via dictation, because it's easier than looking down at the number and tapping it in. So Apple servers have 27 copies each week of my credit card number, which is already bad. But it's going to sync your passwords between iOS and Mac devices, and it can make them be super secure. And it means I don't have to rely on a third-party utility to do it. And it's going to, I'm excited.
I started trying to use 1Password, and I do use it for some stuff, but I find that a lot of times it gets in my way.
Right.
Like, there are sites where it constantly pops up the little, like, you want to remember this? And it's like, it's because I put in like a different URL or something like that, or different, depending if you're on the login page versus the homepage of a website.
Having two different layers of remembering really passwords where there's Safaris and OS X's, and then there's also 1Passwords, has never been the most convenient way to do it. There's two different things remembering my passwords. Yeah. And
I mean,
like,
you pretty much have to turn off Safaris if you're going to use
Well, I never have.
That makes it much worse.
Yeah.
Also, you know, you can't embed 1Password in the browser on iOS. So there's a browser embedded in the 1Password app, but I don't surf in the 1Password app.
And it doesn't get all the JavaScript performance benefits.
So now, presumably, although I'm not sure I saw this demoed, but presumably it will sync with your iPhone and your iPad, and you can do autofill on those devices.
I think they said that more or less.
I was listening for that and I didn't catch
it. They said it synced with iOS.
That's the killer feature, is if it will let you insert your credit card and your password and all of that in Safari on iOS, that's a big deal.
Oh, I
so this
so.
Sounds
they're showing it there on
so
iOS.
This sounds great, but let me take you back.
Parade,
bring us down.
Let me take you back to Reading List, and Apple at the time pitched it as sort of basically saying this is kind of like
never thought that's what Apple. Go ahead.
So they didn't say it specifically, but they pitched it
but
as basically the same thing.
Yeah, you heard it,
and it really was and still is to this day a pale shadow of Instapaper. And so
I thought the demo for Reading List stuff today was embarrassing, by the way. Look, you can keep scrolling through articles.
Amazing. All I'm saying is I'm skeptical, and I look forward to seeing it, because
I'm switching on day
one. It's going to take a lot to replace 1Password for me and for people who are
not much for me.
It's going to take the existence of anything else. I love those people, but
it's like Reading List in that way. And that Reading List, a lot of people didn't use Instapaper. It's really more of a power user feature, and a lot of people that were just normal everyday users used Reading List because it was there. And I think
iCloud
Keychain.
I have the same experience with Reading List, which is to say, Well, honestly, I end up doing the same thing with that I do with Instant Papers. I put stuff in it and forget it's there and never get back to it. But that's more of a me failing than a technology failing. But that said, I do think that there's a lot of power. It's just stuff that's built in. And I know dozens of Mac users, almost everybody in my family at least, you know, who would never in a million years use 1Password or something like that, right?
Right.
But they will just click that button that says, oh, do you want me to remember your password for you? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And great. It's going to be seamless. It's going to be super secure. And, you know, the fact that it's...
will it be super secure? Because by default, the keychain is locked with your user password.
Right. So the only people that will have access to it are you and the NSA.
So you need a good user password.
Right. But
I'm just
ignoring
Dan here.
I was just talking, they're using robust AES 256-bit encryption.
Oh, sure. But by default, in order to make it easier for users, the keychain is unlocked by you logging in.
Right.
So there are cases where it's not going to be, I think, nearly as secure as something like 1Password, where you're supposed to pick one really good password. And so we're going to need to start telling Mac users when they start upgrading here that they need to either change that password or they're going to need to make a much stronger user password and lock when they go to sleep.
I wonder if OS X will prompt you in the future, you know, based on this, how strong
if you
want to
enable this,
you need
a stronger password.
And remember that you've always been able to pick a different keychain password than your user account. And
right.
So,
yeah.
So you
could have to pick it.
Right. You have to pick it.
More tips for us to write articles about.
I use my user password as my 1Password password also. So I'm the worst.
The worst.
But having it built in. Having it built in, even if it's only like C level compared to 1Password's A level, is still miles better.
Right, right. And
just
that,
by
that's
virtue
part
of
what
being
I was getting
built
at, is that,
in.
Yeah. Is that it's going to make it accessible for a lot more people.
And I'm sure 1Password will find lots of ways, as all competitors to Apple who have a lot of their features taken over by the core system, they will find all the different edges. Apple's solutions to problems are always going to be for broad users, and they're going to have a lot of the rough edges filed off. And some people want those tweaks and rough edges, and that's the opportunity for those third parties.
And some people would never use the better, quote unquote, things, but if it's right there in the OS, they'll say, "Hey, this is cool."
And I think it probably long term has a potentially negative impact on a business like 1Password's because.
Sure.
I think it's a little bit different from something like, you know, when Safari had RSS built in, may that rest in peace. Brent Simmons was saying, this is good for NetNewsWire long term because more people will learn about RSS and then they'll want something better. But if this works, this is not the kind of situation, I don't think, where people are like, well, my passwords are synced across all my devices, but I want something that syncs my passwords all across my devices,
some devices
in some more complicated way.
Well, there are other platforms that this isn't, but still.
Yeah. If you use an Android phone, maybe.
You mentioned Safari.
Mm, I did.
We should also mention, while we're talking about Safari, there's another feature there that's not reading list, but it is Twitter links, right? Which is actually, I think, a great feature. Twitter and LinkedIn links, for those of you who use LinkedIn. I haven't met anybody who is that person, but yay for you. But I use Twitter links all the time.
No, it doesn't. Facebook is conspicuously absent.
Yeah, well, I think Facebook wants you to do certain, I don't know, but your Twitter links.
They may
I
not
use,
have access to that information.
I use
information.
Twitter links as a reading list all the time.
Yeah.
So I actually think that's a really clever, fun feature.
That is pretty cool.
Correct me if I interpreted this wrong, but they call it shared
in your face, Lex.
They called it shared links, and as I understand it, you can do one of two things. One is you can follow Twitter accounts, and then it shows you the links, you know, tweets with links in them in those accounts, and you can follow certain people who save links. So you can be reading something and say, I want to save this link, and then those links get shared with people who are following you.
I think you misinterpreted. So they said basically there's a one-click bookmarking feature.
Right.
But that just adds it to your bookmarks.
There's a retweet option. I think you misinterpreted the first thing you said, or at least I heard what you said wrong, because it's not that you follow people specifically for this feature. I believe it's looking at your Twitter list.
That's my question.
And it's pointing
out. Is it only for Twitter?
That's what it says on Apple's website. So it's just people you follow.
Because the way they described it is like, oh, and you can share links with people, but it sounds like he's saying only if
you use Twitter, you can share links with people on Twitter.
You saw a way more interesting keynote than the rest of us did.
With sharing, basically, when you're looking at that sharing sidebar and it's got stuff from your friends, there's a little bar at the top that shows the tweet about it, and you can click right there to read.
I think that's a cool feature.
Yeah, I know, I agree. I just was, when he said, his specific words were, you can share links with your friends.
Yeah, you use the sharing.
Right, but he didn't, I was unclear.
Let me introduce you to a service called Twitter where you can share links with your friends.
That's what I was unclear about. Does this mean only by tweeting,
we got some new apps in here. Before we move on from OS X, we've got a couple more apps. Maps is finally on the Mac. And iBooks is finally on the map.
The best maps introduction by far is the fact that you can share. You can share. You can send
over
direct
Twitter,
driving directions via Twitter to yourself and your shell. You can send
directions to your phone.
Yeah, awesome.
I want that for everything. I want that button everywhere. Send this document to my iPhone. Send this email
my
to my iPhone.
Like
just,
my
oh, yeah,
clipboard.
Just get whatever the heck I'm looking at and put it on my iPhone. I thought that was awesome.
I mean, that was essentially what I loved about iCloud Tabs.
Yep.
It was like, oh, man, I want to look at this site on my iPhone. Or I want to look at this site that I had on my iPhone on my Mac. So having that there is in and of itself, I think, a winner. And maps. I don't know if maps. Granted, your directions may still lead you into a river, but
So two weird things with that was that I was surprised that they didn't talk about maps data at all.
They did. They mentioned it very briefly. They said they had been working on it and improving it, but they didn't go into it.
Oh, I didn't pay attention then. But I also, they've got
there's literally one sentence.
iBooks and maps in the Mavericks preview have these new flatter style icons, but nothing else does. So they kind of stand out as, look, we're iOS apps on your Mac.
Didn't go back and redo all the other apps.
Although they did elsewhere.
Yeah, redo the UI on Calendar, Death to Stitch Leather.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that.
Corinthian Leather.
Corinthian Leather is gone.
I presume that I can only presume that means that the address book bookie format is also gone, but they did not talk about it or show it.
There's no guarantees.
There's no guarantee, but that seems like with the hugely anti-skeuomorphic remarks they kept making, I have to think that is also
good. I got a kick out of all the jokes. There was one about wood, one about green felt, one about stitching.
See, we're not in iOS 7 yet, though.
You're totally cheating.
Dan, he's jumping the gun.
I was talking about it on Calendar, which is an OS 10.
Which is an OS 10. Mm. Dan just ran. Not yet. Not yet. We're almost there.
And iBooks stuff is cool.
I'm about to take off here.
Definite non-skeuomorphic look in iBooks too, right? Because there's no shelving.
I'll bet that there's an option in iBooks to make your book look bookish.
I would actually
be
surprised.
On the iPad.
Bookish.
I would actually be surprised if there was on the Mac. I think
this is great
more
for
iTunes-y.
People. We've gotten as book publishers, we've gotten a lot of complaints from people about, and I know Adam and Tanya Angst who do Take Control eBooks have gotten it too, complaints that you can't read these books on the Mac because there's no iBooks for Mac. So there finally is, and more exciting than that, all those fancy iBooks author books that were previously available only on the iPad will now all also play on the Mac.
I also assume that things that you build yourself, for example, if I generate an EPUB from Scrivener, that I can open it
it
in iBooks, which is so much better than emailing it or Dropboxing it to myself on my iPad, getting my iPad checking, okay, I made a typo right there.
Yeah.
Now I have to go and do all of that over again.
That's a big deal. So there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, Mac overview here, not only did we get a couple new Mac models, but OS X, which could have been seen as being kind of not on life support, but on just sort of like just stay synced to iOS.
Managed for profit.
Lots of good stuff. Lots of good stuff in here. I'm excited to see it.
And that was that. That was the end of the keynote.
No, but there was more. But before we move on to our next subject, I'd like to tell you about our sponsor.
Ooh.
Yeah, are you excited, Lex?
I'm super excited.
I know you are, because I know you love these guys too. It's Smile Software. They're very nice people.
Love them.
They really are. And they are the makers of, among other fine products, PDF Pen 6. PDF Pen is an all-purpose Mac PDF editor. You can add your signatures, you can add text and images, you make changes and correct typos in your PDF. Boy, I've done that. That's the most infuriating thing when you got a PDF that's got one letter wrong.
Mm.
You can take documents scanned and OCR'd, build forms, and there's even Microsoft Word export in the new version 6.
Have we ever rated this fine app?
You know, I'm glad you asked me that question, Lex. You're good. We should do this. We should do ads all the time together.
Yeah.
4.5 mice.
4.5 mice. That's just about all the mice.
And that's just the one version. If we added all of their apps together, it would be like 18 mice.
That's a lot of mice.
That's actually an infestation of mice. So let's focus on the 4.5 gotten for PDF Pen. PDF Pen Pro is available for $99.95. It's $40 more than PDF Pen. And that's the one that got 4.5 mice. And it does all sorts of stuff, creates PDFs from websites. Create and edit tables of contents, create and edit interactive cross-platform forms, automatically create fillable forms, just an amazing amount of stuff for the pro version at $99.95. Here's where you need to go. SmileSoftware.com/MW, that stands for Macworld, MW podcast. Go there, tell them that we sent you, the URL will tell them that we sent you, And they're really nice people too. So Smile Software, formerly Smile on my Mac. Now they just smile at everyone.
They smile across devices.
Yeah, across all the devices. PDF Pen 6. Thank you for sponsoring the Macworld podcast. Now let's move on to
the big one.
What for me was the mind-blowing part of the keynote.
I'm glad you got your mind back.
Have I, Dan?
Well.
iOS 7. We knew that there would be big news about iOS 7. With the departure of Scott Forstall, there were lots of rumors about Johnny Ive in charge of the design of software as well as hardware. What was that going to mean? There were a lot of people saying, well, they're just going to skin the new thing with something slightly different and make everything look flatter. But what we got from iOS 7 was not only a massive change in look that'll be coming to your iPhones and iPads this fall, but a bunch of new features as well. And it kind of blew me away just that it was lots of new features and this really dramatic look. I think it's fair to say, sort of like with OS X in the early days, iOS for the first few years was really about adding all the missing features. And this is the first time that Apple's really gone back and reevaluated and rethought a lot of the underlying assumptions of
Tim
of
Cook
iOS.
Said repeatedly this is the biggest change in iOS since the introduction of the iPhone. And I think that's definitely true.
Yes.
If you look at it. It's a radical overhaul. And as you said, we did expect a change in UI and look going in. But it went beyond that to, you know, they made a big point out of the Steve Jobs quote that design is not just how something looks, but how it works.
I have to tell you, I was looking at it and I had allowed myself to become convinced that this wasn't going to be a massive design overhaul. There just hadn't been enough time since Johnny Ive took over. And boy, it is totally a massive design
really
makeover.
Different.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's almost like they just gave it to an entirely new team and said, here, do what you will. Right. And they did.
And I thought that they made the excellent point, which is that it is completely recognizably iOS.
Yes.
There's no doubt about what you're using. And yet it's,
you don't need to learn how to do it, right? Like,
and it's totally
it's usable, but it looks, it's like they said, it's like getting a new phone, but you already know how to use it.
Well, the icons are different. The fonts are different. And then
the icons movement is different.
And then there's the home screen. That's the one that really blew me away, is that they're using the sensors in the phone to create a parallax effect. One of the things that in the video, Johnny Ive said, because he doesn't like to be on stage, so he's just in the videos and then in the audience, was that they designed this with this idea of planes of depth. So you've got like layers that slide on top. You've got kind of where the icons and stuff live in the middle. And then you've got your wallpaper in the back, which makes sense from a design standpoint. But then they do this parallax effect where as you're holding it, it's like it's 3D and you're seeing behind the background moves as you – it's crazy.
It's like the behind-the-music story.
Right. It's as crazy as when they did it with the volume doohickey in iOS 6, where if you move your iPhone around today, you can see the volume.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That was like the shine on it.
And there's no reason for it, and it makes no sense. But at the same time,
it's kind of delightful.
You can't stop looking at it sometimes.
It's the definition of eye candy.
It is. There's no point to it except that it's cool.
But there's so much other stuff in there that does go into utility. I mean, I think Control Center. Let's talk about Control Center.
That answers my complete favorite –
I mean,
one at a time, boys.
It's a free update, and yet I think almost everybody in this room would have gladly paid money just for that.
Control Center. Dan Frakes, what is Control Center?
So I'm looking at a picture here, and so before we've had the lock screen, people have been complaining for years that you couldn't do certain things on the lock screen, right? You couldn't change your change your brightness. You couldn't turn Bluetooth on and off. And so I think all of us have written at one point or another how we wanted something like this somewhere. And I thought it was funny because I always figured they'd add a little bit, but we'd all be complaining that, but they left out AirPlay or they put everything in there. So
you drag up from the bottom of the phone
and it gives you this little translucent, semi-translucent panel that has controls for, I'm looking at the picture here.
Airplane mode,
Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, do not disturb, screen lock, brightness, music player, flashlight, AirDrop, AirPlay, timer, calculator, and camera.
And so I have a couple questions on it. One
what's
is,
missing?
Can I customize those apps? Like, I do like having the quick access to the camera, but the timer I don't need. I'm only setting my timer via Siri. Can I swap out what app goes there?
I'm guessing no.
Yeah, that's my guess, too.
And then,
you'll take what Apple gives you.
For now, anyways. That might be an iOS 8 thing.
Right. I also want to know, what happens now if you double tap and swipe to the right? Because today in iOS 6 world, you double tap and swipe to the right, and that's where you get a very limited subset of these features.
Yes.
This is just gone completely?
Yeah.
Well, I think the whole multitasking thing is overhauled as well.
Yeah, see, the double tap does something different now, where it's doing very much like you've seen in Safari before. or actually WebOS.
WebOS.
Right, yeah, that's what I said. Right,
where it slides back, and you can see the individual screens of all of your running apps, and you can flip between them.
But still with the icons beneath them, too, which is an interesting approach.
Which is kind of cool, actually, because then you see the little icons at the bottom like
so
you always did.
So you can get more screen. But you can see
and
more.
You know, right, and you know which app that is, because not all apps are recognizable.
Right, exactly. And that's what I thought was great, because in WebOS, you didn't see that. You just saw pages, and you're like, I think that's Safari, but...
You had Safari on WebOS? That was impressive.
Wait, did you say AirDrop?
Yes. Wait. I just want to say one. You know.
But wait, there's more.
Wait. So you were talking about that thing where you double click and then you swipe to the left and you get the. So I not outside of Macworld staff and a few Macworld readers, no one I know even knew that existed. And I think that's part of what.
Every time I show that to somebody, they're like, whoa, what is that?
And it's, I just have to say, not only is it hidden, it's so stupid. On the iPhone, it has a volume control.
Right. Not a brightness. Exactly.
Everybody's got two volume buttons right there.
And
a second page. Right. And no brightness.
Right.
No brightness.
So people have been asking for control, but this also, I think, makes.
I'm still mad. I don't even care about notifications. I'm still mad. Whatever. What is control center? Fine, but I'm still mad. I'm not going to get over the volume slider for another year.
So go ahead. Go ahead and AirDrop.
Well, so AirDrop, I was convinced, couldn't come to iOS without a dedicated app for receiving AirDrop files. And I was hoping it was going to be some kind of iCloud app. But no, I was dead wrong. So apps that use the share sheet, the one where you tap a little share icon and then you get options to, you know, copy it to the clipboard or share it via messages or mail or whatever else, will gain a new option to AirDrop it. And AirDrop, they made some slam against the Android bumping.
Yeah, bumping your phone.
You don't have to walk around the room bumping.
So if we were in this room right now and we all had our iPhones out and we wanted to AirDrop a file to each other, since we're all here, I would see all of your phones and I'd be able to send a thing to all of you. But I think it's going to be very app specific. If you don't have the same kind of app to receive the data,
because I was going to say, you know, they demonstrate with photos, which is an obvious option. I assume videos will probably work as well, but it's unclear exactly what else you can do. Can I go into Pages and AirDrop a Pages file?
It sounds like if it has a share,
if you're running also Pages, basically. Yeah.
So the interesting thing though is that on the other end, you have to be on the same local network. So
that's incorrect.
No, they said in the
it's peer to peer.
It's peer to peer.
It's just like on AirDrop, the Mac. Mac AirDrop.
So it's using your Wi-Fi card, not your Wi-Fi network.
It uses sort of a Wi-Fi direct thing.
Boom, Frakes is like down to -27.
Yeah, so basically, as long as you are in the same place and we both have Wi-Fi
enabled.
Yeah, it's going to be enabled, but you don't have to be on the same
but
network.
But it's Wi-Fi, though, right?
It is Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
it's peer to peer.
It's just not over a wireless network. It's over an ad hoc.
So, and you're right, because he did say local room, local, not local network.
Just Mac AirDrop works the same way. You think you're just attached to your base station, but with Mac AirDrop, it will also attach to a local.
And the theory is that should mean file transfers can go faster because it's peer to peer. You don't have to worry about other network latency. Right. But that's given the peak
speeds on iOS. Right. It's like if you're not on my Wi-Fi, it doesn't matter. We can still share things.
I think it's going to be awesome.
So and then what was interesting is that if you do that, say I send something to you, then you get something that pops up on your screen saying, hey, Dan's trying to send you something. Did you want to accept it?
Okay. And I'll bet that if you accept a thing and you don't have an app to open it, you can go buy it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's so nutty.
So we talked about multitasking. We talked about Control Center. Notification Center is getting a workout, which is really good because it really needed some. It's tabbed now. You're going to have a lot more.
Or you get a Today View, which is a little bit Google Now-ish.
Today seems very useful because instead of having all that other crap collected, you can just look at what you actually care about.
Right, and the missed thing too. So you can only look at the notifications you missed as opposed to all your notifications.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's trying to be helpful. It's not just showing you push notifications. That's that Google Now-like feature.
They completely overhauled photos, mail, camera. Like they completely overhauled everything.
Yeah,
all
the apps look different.
The weather has actual weather.
Animated weather in it, and the whole look is very white with some bright color, but it's not heavy. It's like a lot of white background.
This is interesting because in some ways it's the first thing that makes me actually want a white iPhone because it's very almost seems to work better on the white iPhone.
You know, speaking of that, just the color choices, they also pointed out that depending on what wallpaper you set, you can have an animated background image if you want, an animated lock screen, but depending on the photo you choose, it will the same way that iTunes today looks at your album art and chooses what background
color. Or your translucent menu bar.
Right, so today when you pick out your wallpaper, it'll choose what accent color to use on things like the new round phone buttons on the phone screen and things.
Right.
It's inherited from your background, which is weird.
Crazy.
I will say, I don't know with Siri exactly what they showed. They went through Siri very quickly. They said, here's some new very high-quality voices, which were indeed they very high-quality voices.
Like the presentation is slightly different for some things like movies.
Right. Different answers. And they showed it's a different interface when you're talking to it, too. But it looked like they were about to show a Google Now ripoff of live transcription.
Yeah,
but then they didn't do it. They didn't talk to it.
They said, you see a voice wave.
Right. There's a sound wave at the bottom. But I want to know, is it transcribing on the – because it said – and now it's going to be much faster, too. But it still looked like he said, show me this. And it said, okay, let me work on that for you. Yeah. And then brought the results. And the biggest annoyance with Siri is I say, you know, search the web for Dan Morin photos. And it says, okay, I'll perform a web search for Dan Morin photos. But I don't want it to say that. I just want it to launch Safari because I have to wait for it to launch Safari and start the search. And I can't tell if they changed that, if they're doing transcription on the fly
or what.
It
seems like it may not be done yet.
Yeah. You'll get Bing search, though.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, there was an audible gasp in the audience when they said, oh, and you can get your Bing searches right here.
I thought of it more as an amusement than a gasp.
Yes.
In your face, maybe when Google. You were up in the press area where you were, but back with the heathens where I was, there was a lot of...
I don't know the norms.
us plebes.
You
the groundlings.
Developers. Right. So developers are not the norms.
Yeah.
They're the special developers.
That's right. They're developers.
I thought the multitasking, we mentioned the sort of WebOS card type thing, but they also did a lot with background multitasking.
Dream come true, by the way.
So,
as long as it doesn't kill my battery, right? I mean, this is where all the Android people will be like, oh, now the iOS guys are saying yay to real multitasking. It's like, I've always thought yay to real multitasking. The problem has been boo to bad battery life.
Yep, right.
And on Android devices, that can be a real problem.
The technology wasn't really there at that point where it's like, sure, we could have let everything run unfettered. There are plenty of jailbreaks that would say, here, let your stuff run in the background. But
now Apple's got battery to burn, apparently.
So the question is, you know, they talked about a very clever sounding algorithm where the iOS device is going to look at what apps you're using. And if you use Twitter or Facebook all the time, it'll instruct those apps, feel free to pull more stuff in the background so that as soon as they launch your stuff is ready. And if you always check CNN in the morning was their example, then they'll know at 6 a.m. they should gather the new headlines so that as soon as you launch it, they're there. That's all clever. It seems like they could have it's a step smarter than saying, let me choose which apps are allowed to have background access, which I thought was the way they were going to go. I thought when you launch an app, it was going to say, you know, Safari or, you know, Facebook wants to show badges and Facebook wants the ability to pull data in the background.
I think
because you'd always just say okay to them.
Right, that's the problem. You end up with four dialog boxes and nobody's going to read them. But I think more than that, they also have talked about the other improvements where it's like you unlock your phone, then your other apps know, oh, hey, now's a good time to go fetch stuff or we're on better Wi-Fi, so let's grab stuff now as opposed to when we're out on cellular. Like, They spend a lot of time optimizing and making it so it's intelligent about when it does run in the background and what kind of things it does in the background.
You can get through the entire Lord of the Rings opening credit sequence on one iPhone battery running iOS 7.
Presumably, developers will have some new APIs, and we can't see behind the curtain now of the rest of the conference, that developers will have new tricks that they'll be able to use to say, all right, app, here's what you do in these circumstances, right? Here's what you do when you wake up. I want you to do this. So it's not just like your app is running blindly.
Right.
I think maybe the developers will have some nice tools about setting out what the app will do in those circumstances. So, you know, but it is Apple wants us to feel like this is real full multitasking and not the protected limited multitasking. And that's cool because there's some things that never fit into the five cases of multitasking that were allowed. And it sounds like now those things will be able to run anyway, which is cool.
I'll tell you the subtlest feature that I liked where I thought this really means that it's not just a major facelift but a rethinking of how stuff works was that Safari thing. Because already Safari, they had made some changes where stuff gets a little bit smaller and out of the way as you start using it. But now they showed that it's still going to keep showing you the URL that you're on or the web search you just performed to get to the current page. But the location bar shrinks and shrinks and shrinks as you're scrolling through the page because you don't need it right now.
Right.
But you can still tap right into it. But it's, you know, you've got
Chrome at the bottom disappears too.
Right. It's you know, it's a very clever approach to saying, we know you want this stuff and here's quick access to it. But the main thing you're after is this actual web content. So let's give as much space to it as we can.
Right. It's sort of like automated full screen mode because I never use full screen mode in Safari because it's like, okay, I got to tap this thing. I got to remember later to get out of it. And it's pretty much saying, okay, we'll take care of that for you. And then we'll give you back what you need when you need it.
Any last thoughts about iOS 7? Other favorites?
Oh, God, Game Center.
Game Center has no more
felt.
It's
felt is gone.
We didn't get back to the skeuomorphic.
I'll miss the felt.
No more leather, no more felt, no more stitching.
Wood.
See
no
the
more
new
wood.
Yeah, one of the best lines was, look, everybody, it no longer has, and they said this for macOS, but it no longer has stitching, and yet it stays on the screen.
It still stays on the screen.
But, and many cows were saved.
So I will say that I'm excited cows. You can now take square photos with the camera.
It's so weird.
And filters.
I know, right?
Wow, huh?
I tried to get an Apple employee to show me that feature on his phone because I wanted to understand how that's possibly useful other than
Instagram.
Just being a jerk to Instagram.
Oh, it's 100% being a jerk to Instagram.
You know, here's the thing. And I think that all of us can fall victim to this sometimes. When Apple does one of these shows, we are the audience in some ways. I mean, this is really for developers,
for
but we are going to look at this and love it and go crazy. And our readers are going
to
go crazy
for
this stuff.
And it's for us relaying to the public.
And
yes.
I look at it and I watch it and I'm super excited about things. And I forget while I'm in there, wait, they don't have this, they don't have this, they don't have
right.
this. And so where are my freaking lock screen like widgets? And where is the ability to have more information on my home screen? And how could we still be using, I mean,
well,
yes, I can have
multi-screen
folders.
Notification Center is available from lock screen.
In the lock screen now.
Right, but I want widgets and modules and doohickeys.
Do you, Lex?
I do.
Apple says you don't.
Yeah.
So this is one of the things about the new control center is it sounds like it's only available on the home screen, not the lock screen. Right.
I challenge you again.
They never once showed it in the keynote coming from a lock screen. It was always on the home screen.
But they said it could. They said it's because I even wrote it. It's available from
Lex,
the lock screen.
Until we see it, we don't have to believe
it. Right.
So did they actually say that the entire control center is available on the lock
screen?
They
said so. Yes.
Wait, did you actually go and?
No, I just watched the live.
All right.
You need to do that.
Fair enough. Before we go, because we are running out of time, because this is a super long special version of the Macworld podcast. Any thoughts about iTunes Radio, which is essentially Pandora features, as far as I can tell.
Well, let me put it this way:
Pandora.
It's only available on Windows, right?
Yeah. I am an iTunes Match subscriber. I love iTunes Match. I use it all the time.
I like it.
I love it because I don't have to fiddle around with syncing stuff to my iPhone anymore, right. And all my music is there. And
like
there are quirks, but
I like it when it works.
I will pay for it, and this is free, ad free with what I'm already spending. So it's basically free for me. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it's a great.
But otherwise,
if you're already an iTunes Match subscriber, then it's a great deal.
But it doesn't seem like there's anything new here.
No, it's a way to get you to buy
Apple's
songs.
Version. Just like how Google Play Music, whatever its name was, is just a knockoff of Spotify. This is just a knockoff.
It's funny how much of a big deal was made about this ahead of time, just in terms of like there were so many rumors and so many whispers, and this is going to be a huge initiative. And in the end, really, it's only part of the music app on your iPhones or iTunes. It's a feature.
The thing is I said this on Twitter last week, and I said, you know what? I don't think it's going to be anything new. It's going to be just like Pandora. But the fact that it's built into iTunes, I think, is going to mean that it's going to get a huge influx of users. Because I like Pandora, but the truth is I listen to it maybe once or twice a month because I always forget to go to
the
web.
And this is built into the music
app.
Well, this is the same argument about the Google Play Music Store, is that the only real innovation there is that now it's built into all of Google services.
Right.
And it's an ecosystem feature.
Yeah.
More than it is anything innovative. But yeah. I have to say I'm a little disappointed just because, Pandora is fine and it is good for music discovery, which leads into buying things on the iTunes store, I guess. I was hoping that Apple would have a new take on this and it doesn't.
I'm surprised that they spent so much effort on it. Like they had to build it all. They had to get all those deals signed, which seemed to only happen at the last week possible.
Well, it's huge for Apple, though. I mean, just think of all the revenue they're going to get that they weren't getting before, just based on this. Right?
For ads and for people buying songs.
Yeah.
Well, I think the ads are going to mostly go to pay. That's how they're paying the studios.
Yeah.
Right, but I think they'll get the song revenue. I think is going to be a big deal because if you notice,
there's a little button
on top of everything. Just go ahead and buy this.
I think it's two different audiences. I mean, you may be right, and they know more about this than I do.
I think it was two different audiences. Now I think it's the same audience.
But here's the thing. For me, I would never use the radio. I'm going to use my library.
When I use a subscription service, I kind of don't get it. I forget it's there.
Right.
Because I have a subscription service that I use, and I always forget that I'm even that I have Rhapsody. I just forget about it. Pandora, when I used Pandora, when I remembered, to Dan's point, to use Pandora, oh my God, I bought so many songs.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, absolutely. Because then you hear a song and it's going to go away. So you're like, oh, I need to star that. I need to favorite. And then you look at your favorites list and you're like, that was a good song. I wonder what else I bought. I listened once for like an hour and I bought four albums, right? You get going good with that. So they will make a lot of money on that. But I don't feel like Apple still does not believe that the all-you-can-eat music subscription service is a model. They're throwing in entirely with this other approach of streaming radio and then a la carte purchases, which works for a lot of people and doesn't work for other people.
It's very much an analog to what we all had prior to digital music, right? Like you listen to the radio and then you buy the album.
I agree with you though. It is kind of disappointing that it doesn't seem like outside of it's integrated into iTunes, there's anything new.
Yeah, nothing new at all. I was hoping for some cool, like you can turn your station into a playlist.
Right.
No.
There's a lot of stuff this could have been, but I think that what it is great for Apple. And I think that within 6 months, it's going to have more subscribers than Pandora easily.
It could be. Everybody who has iTunes Match now is going to get it. So, yeah. All right, this has been great. There was so much today. Fortunately, we only went on about half the length of the actual keynote.
You can listen to the podcast again.
And some of the stuff that wasn't in the keynote.
Yeah, exactly right. So there will be much more about everything that happened at the Developers Conference keynote and the rest of the week here on future editions of the Macworld podcast. But for this momentous week, that's it. So once again, I'm Jason Snell, and I would like to thank my guest, Lex Friedman. Great to see you. Dan Frakes, I'm glad you could report from the fantasy keynote that you went to. And Dan Morin, thank you.
Thanks, Jason.
Until next time, goodbye.